Good evening. Good to see you folks. We are in Leviticus. We're going to close the book tonight. We're going to be in chapter 27, although we're going to spend a little bit of time in 26. I feel like there's still a little bit more that I'd like to share with you in 26, and then we'll close with chapter 27. So as we close this book tonight, I think we've seen a wonderful journey through the book of Leviticus, and I think we've seen Jesus, and we've seen pictures of the Lord all the way through it. So again, as I said, I'm going to recap chapter 26. So if you would turn to chapter 26, we'll start there. And you might remember verse 1 starts out, "You shall not make for yourself idols, nor shall you set up for yourselves an image or a sacred pillar, nor shall you place a figured stone," meaning a carved stone of any type, "in your land to bow down to it, for I am the Lord your God." The Hebrew word for idol is nothing, not meaning there's nothing. It means nothing. So when he talks about idols, he says, do not build idols for yourself. He's saying, don't build nothings for yourself. And this world spends a great deal of time, Wall Street spends a lot of time getting us to spend our money on nothing, to spend our time and energy on nothing. What do I mean by nothing? Well, stuff that's just going to disappear. They bring you momentary satisfaction, maybe certain momentary pleasure, but in the long run, you have to ask yourself how much good it's really doing. We enjoy homes, nothing wrong with homes, but when it's all said and done, the homes are going to burn, right? They're not. The only thing the home is good for is you to make it a home and not a house. In other words, it's a place where you can teach your children about Jesus. It's a place where you can have your devotions. It's a place where God can be honored in your home. But that's what makes it special. It's not the fact that it's just a house. So we have to be very careful that we're not letting Wall Street dictate to us what's important and what's not, because a lot of what they're saying is important is nothing. So he encourages them not to set up nothings in their life or bow down to them as though they are some kind of gods, when in reality, they are nothing at all, because there's only one true God and He alone is to be worshiped. And that's why Paul could say in the New Testament that there's no such thing as an idol. Well, what he meant by that is there's no such thing as nothing. In other words, if it's empty and there's nothing to it, why bow down to it? So what Paul was trying to say is, don't set up figures for yourself. Don't bow down to things. Don't kiss statues. Don't have that religious experience and miss the one and only true God. So that's what's being said here. Look at verse 2. "You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord." By the Sabbaths here, plural, the Lord is meaning the Passover, the new moon Sabbaths, the Feast of Pentecost, the blowing of the trumpets, Yom Kippur, all the holy days that He set up. So God is basically saying, I want you to keep those up. Now keep in mind, if some of you are going, well, does that mean that we're supposed to keep them now? No, this was specifically to His people, the Jewish people, and this was given to them for a specific period of time. But the point here is the whole reason the Lord wanted them to keep them is the same reason that Paul in the New Testament says, don't forsake assembling together. In other words, the Lord wanted people actively involved in their religious community, in their, I would say religious Old Testament. I would kind of kick out the word religious for New Testament Christian. But He wanted them to be involved in the things of the sanctuary. He wanted them to be involved in His work, that their minds would be on Him on a daily basis, that they would take time out of their life to rejoice in the blessings that God had given to them. Paul says to not forsake the assembling together, as is the custom of some. Why does he say that? Because he knows that if we hang out together, we're stronger. He knows that if we hang out together and we share God's word and we have fellowship with each other, it's a constant reminder of God's goodness. The wolf likes to take one sheep and get them away from the flock because they're much more susceptible. He can pounce on the one sheep. So we need that fellowship with each other. That's where we gain our strength. And it reminds us that Jesus needs to be the center of our life. Now, I know you guys hear me say it a lot, but you keep coming back, you know, because we need to hear it, don't we? I never get tired of someone telling me that I need to make Jesus my life, that I need to have Him be the center of my life and the focus of my life and the devotion of my life. because I always need to hear it, because in any given day, there's a dozen things that try to come in and pull me away from that. So we need to be reminded. Now, for obedience, God promises blessing, and he even promises victory over their enemies. Look at verses 7 and 8. But you will chase your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword. 5 of you will chase 100, and 100 of you will chase 10,000, and your enemies will fall before you by the sword. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I like superheroes. You know, ever since I've been a little kid, I like Mighty Mouse cartoons. You know, I like Superman. I like the superhero. I like the guy that's just so crispy, clean, good, and he rushes in and saves the day, and he makes right, wrong, and, you know, he's got the strength to leap a tall building in a single bound and faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive. I like that idea. I like the fact that there's a superhero there. And guys, you don't get any more super or any more hero than Jesus. And what Jesus is saying to them, he says, if you'll put me first and do what I ask, I will be your superhero. Now, I think this transcends Old Testament and New Testament. Jesus still says, I'll be your superhero. There's just some buildings you can't get over. There's some bullets you can't dodge. There's some locomotives you're going to be weaker than. But Jesus is saying, I'm bigger than all those, and I will be for you what you can't be. I'll do the things that you need for me to do. He promised them the same thing. And we read in the book of Judges, there was a guy by the name of Shamgar who killed 600 Philistines with an ox goad. Let me read that to you. Judges 3, verses 29 through 31. They struck down at the same time about 10,000 Moabites, all robust and valiant men. They weren't wimps. These were warriors that they struck down. And no one escaped. So Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land was undisturbed for 80 years. After him came Shamgar, this is the guy I was telling you about, the son of Anath, who struck down 600 Philistines with an ox goad, and he also saved Israel. One man with a small weapon. You know, isn't that superhero stuff? Don't you want to feel like you can do that when you're being tormented on the freeway? When you see someone treating someone that way, don't you want to kind of be the superhero? Don't you want to be the black belt, you know, and like say, okay, that's enough, man. You know, you just kind of take, not that you really want to hurt anybody. You just want to sling them all over the room and say, look, don't mess with me. You know, you kind of need a superhero, and God's promised to do that for us. King David had a fellow in his army that killed 800 men in one battle. One guy kills 800 men. In 1 Samuel 23:8, these are the names of the mighty men who David had. He names off several guys, and then he goes, and then Adino, the Israelite, because of 800 men slain by him at one time. Now you think, that's a pretty bad dude. You wouldn't want to get in a fight with this guy. He kills 800 guys at one time. Here's the thing, guys, you guys can do the same thing. It wasn't the man, it was the God behind the man. God makes superheroes out of all of us, but without him, we're kind of jelly. Without him, we look at our odds and we take off running. Without him, we see life and get afraid of it. But with God, we look at life and go, come on, bring it on. You know, you think you can take me? You can't take me. You know, I have my God on my side. You guys may remember that Gideon, God kept bringing down his army and bringing down his army, and he kept telling him, you got too many, you got too many. They were going up against 135,000 Midianites, and God kept taking down his army and kept taking down his army. He kept saying, any of you that are afraid, go home. Any of you that are this, go home. Any of you that are that, or go home. Finally, he ends up with 300 men, and those 300 men defeat 130,000 Midianites. God keeps his promises. And at least you think that's just in the Old Testament? You guys, many of you are maybe too young to remember the Six-Day War, the war in 1973, the Yom Kippur. I don't know if you guys remember this situation, but I'm going to read something to you that Pastor Chuck had in one of his teachings. It reads like this. He goes, in the 1973 Yom Kippur War, the Syrians had broken through on the Golan Heights. They were within 1 mile of Galilee headquarters. The armored brigade of the Syrians, 100 tanks, plus the armored personnel, the carriers, the mobile cannons, were just 1 mile from the Galilean headquarters. In other words, 1 mile from it all being over and Israel being gone, Israel falling into the hands of the Syrians. The entire armored division of the Syrians and the Israelites, they were up against all of them. The Israelites had 2 tanks, only 2 tanks. There was a young lieutenant that heard about the war, and he happened to be hitchhiking, and he heard about this, so he hitchhiked all the way into headquarters, and he told him, he says, my name is Swiggy, and he says, I'm a tank commander, and if you'll give me 2 tanks, he says, I will go in and do whatever I can to try to help this. Actually, I think he said, you give me some tanks, and they said, well, we only have 2 tanks. We have a 3rd tank that once we clear the bodies out of it and we do some work on it, we might be able to give you a 3rd tank if you wait for about an hour. So he did that. They put them all side by side. Swiggy was in the middle. The 2 guys were in the outside. And he started giving commands to go after these guys. He rounded the corner. There's hundreds of tanks from the Syrians. He rounds the corner and sees them all. And he starts giving commands. And these guys aren't firing. And all of a sudden he looks back and he realizes he's lost both of his guys. They're gone. They're up in flames. So it's just him. He just starts in after these guys. He starts going down. They're up kind of on a hill. So he goes down into the bottom of this ravine, and it's starting to get dark. And he'll come out over the top of the ravine, and he'll hit one of them and knock out a tank. And then he'll go back down, go about 200 or 300 yards this way, pop up on the top of the hill again, take out another one. He'll pop over again the other side and pop out another one. He keeps doing that. He keeps taking out the tanks. He takes out over 60 tanks. The Syrians don't know what's going on. They think that the Israelis have an entire brigade of tanks. They don't know it's just Swiggy. They retreat. They give up and they take off. They were 1 mile from capturing Israel. God still looks out for his people. And if he finds one man who's willing to be a Swiggy or Swiggy or whatever his name is, he finds one woman who's willing to let God be strong on his behalf, he still makes superheroes out of. How cool is that? But we buy the lies of the world. We live too much by Wall Street instead of the promises of the Lord. I don't know about you guys, but I want to live in that superhero mode. You know, I want to be a superhero to my kids. I want to be a superhero to my wife. I want to be a superhero to you guys. I want to be a superhero to my community. I want to make my life count, you know? And I know I can't do it on my own. That just doesn't lie in my strength or my power. It doesn't lie within us. But you know what? God can do some incredible, wonderful things. He was talking, Mike McIntosh was also talking about an outreach that was being done, and Dennis Agajanian was there, and they were doing some kind of street witnessing, and Ruth Graham Bell was there, and they were going to do some street witnessing, and she goes, start playing some music. So he kind of says, okay, so he starts playing. He looks up, and here's a little petite Ruth Graham Bell. She goes into a porno shop on the corner. She goes in, and she starts saying, what are you men doing in here? You have wives, you have children, you're not supposed to be in here. You need to get out of this place. In fact, there's a guy out playing some music. You need to go out and listen to what he's saying. The entire place cleared out. They came out and heard the gospel. Some of them gave their life to the Lord. Now, if Dennis Agajanian would have went in there and said that, he would have had a fight. The guys would have fought him. He's a big, robust guy. They would have jumped him and they would have fought him. But little petite Ruth Graham Bell goes in there and they were all polite to her. They went out. They left. God was able to do an amazing work. She became a superhero in that moment because she was just willing to let the Lord do whatever he wanted to do in her life. So as we close chapter 26, we need to be reminded, we need to stay on God's side. As much as we possibly can, we need to stay on God's side because that's where the power is. That's where the strength is. That's where the victory is in God's hands. The closer we stay to Him, the more of a superhero that we are. The further we get away from Him, the more we get the snot beat out of us. Sorry for such a graphic expression, but it's true. We get beat up out there when we're away from the Lord. Chapter 27, excuse me, deals with vows that are made to the Lord. I want to say going in, because we're going to cover the chapter kind of in a summary sort of fashion. We're going to cover a lot of verses in a short time. I want to say this, and that is that vows are often made very foolishly. Vows are often made in the heat of battle, when something is going on, when we want the Lord to do something. I need to tell you that vows are not required of the Lord. God does not ask us or expect us to make vows, but if we make a vow, He expects us to follow up on the vow. In other words, if we give our word, we should be men and women of our word. So let me give you an idea of what a vow is. A vow is very simply something like this: Lord, if you will do this for me, I will do that for you. You guys know what I'm talking about. Lord, get me out of this mess, I'll never do it again. Lord, if you get me out of this mess that I'm in right now, I'll never drink again. You get me out of this mess right now, I'll never do drugs again. Lord, you get me out of this mess right now, I'll never go in debt again. Lord, if you get me out of this mess, I'll never be unfaithful again. Those are vows. Now, here in the Old Testament, in this last chapter, God puts a certain monetary value on vows. Because you see, what would happen is sometimes people would commit their houses to God. They would promise God something. And those things that were promised to the Lord had a certain value. And sometimes they would change their mind and say, but I really like this house, I want to keep it. Well, they could have it back, but usually they had to purchase it back with interest. So that kind of gives you an idea of what we're dealing with. Look at verses 1 through 8. Again, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when a man makes a difficult vow, he shall be valued according to your valuation of persons belonging to the Lord. If your valuation is of the male from 20 years even to 60 years old, then your valuation shall be 50 shekels of silver after the shekel of the sanctuary. Or if it is a male, then your valuation shall be 30 shekels. If it be from 5 years even to, female, it shall be 30 shekels. If it be from 5 years even to 20 years old, then your valuation for the male shall be 20 shekels, and for the female, 10 shekels. But if they are from a month even up to 5 years old, then your valuation shall be 5 shekels of silver for the male, and for the female, your valuation shall be 3 shekels of silver. If they are from 60 years old and up, if it is a male, then your valuation shall be 15 shekels, and for the female, 10 shekels. But if he is poorer than your valuation, then he shall be placed before the priest, and the priest shall value him according to the means of the ones who vowed, the priest shall value him. So here's the idea. We're talking about an agricultural society. In an agricultural society, labor equals money. So depending upon what age you were and whether you were strong enough to work, that life could represent a certain dollar amount. Now you might say, well, why are we talking about lives here? Because some people would sell themselves into slavery. And sometimes people would dedicate themselves to God. So he gives a different value here. For the young, robust males, he puts a certain value on. For the young, robust females, he puts a certain value on. For the younger ones, he puts a certain value on. For the ones 60 and older, he puts a certain value on. Look at verse 9. Now, if it is an animal of the kind which men can present as an offering to the Lord, any such that one gives to the Lord shall be holy. He shall not replace it or exchange it, a good for a bad or a bad for a good. If he does exchange the animal for animal, then both it and its substitute shall become holy. If, however, it is an unclean animal of the kind which men do not present as an offering to the Lord, then he shall place the animal before the priest. The priest shall value it as either good or bad, as you, the priest, value it, so it shall be. But if he shall ever wish to redeem it, then he shall add 1/5 to the valuation. So, from people to animals. I want to read something to you that J. Vernon McGee says about these a few verses, and I think it'll help put it into a picture for you. He writes, when I was a pastor of a little country church, a member of the church took me out to his barn lot and showed me a calf. He told me he had given it to the Lord. To tell you the truth, the calf didn't look as it was even, it didn't look as if it would even live, much less be something worthy to dedicate to the Lord. And I suspect that this was the reason that he gave it to the Lord. Well, that calf, over a period of time, became a blue ribbon prize winner. And one day the man came to me and said, you know, this is such a fine animal that I think I had better keep it. But I have another animal over there that I'm giving to the Lord instead. So he sold it and gave the money to the church. And he felt very comfortable about what he had done. God says, this is still J. Vernon McGee saying this, God says, don't substitute. If you have promised to do something for God, go through with it. Remember the sins of Ananias and Sapphira. They said they were giving to the Lord the entire price of the piece of land, but they didn't go through with it. They didn't have to give any of it at all to God. Peter told them that while it was theirs, they were perfectly free to do with it whatever they wished. It was a voluntary offering. But then they tried to withhold some of that from the Lord. This that we are talking about is real today. God holds us to our vows. If you promised him something and haven't made good, it is still on the books. We are dealing with a God of reality. So you kind of get the idea of the idea here that God is requiring his people to be people of integrity. If they make a vow, they follow through on the vow. Now, you might say, well, why does God care? You know what? In one way, I don't think he does. God doesn't care if it's $1 or $5 or $10. You know, with God, it's just zeros. $10 is the same thing to God as $1 million or $10 million or $110 million or $1 million million. Because God owns it all. So you see, when God's writing a check, he can just add as many zeros as he wants to it. Money is not an issue with God, but it sure seems to be with us. Anything of value seems to be the things we work for and we strive for and we run our lives for to try to have. So I think what the Lord is saying here is that if you and I dedicate, especially here in the Old Testament, if they were to dedicate something to God, he wanted them to just keep their word. And I think that's what it's more about than it is the monetary value. He wants his men and women, his people, to be men and women of integrity. Tell you what, this should really make us think long and hard before we take a vow. Doesn't matter how tough things are or how much we want to get out of it, we should think very strong and very hard before we ever say, God, if you just do this for me, I'll do this from you. If you're going to dedicate your child to the Lord, you need to raise them in the Lord. Now, you might go, well, what's up with that? Do you know how many baby dedications we do in a year? And people consider it a ceremony? It's much more than a ceremony. It's much, much more than a ceremony. It is a mom and a dad or a mom and a dad or a family getting up and saying, we are dedicating our child to God. We are making a promise to God and to everyone here that we're going to do everything within our power to teach this little baby about Jesus. So when they come to an age of accountability, they'll be able to give their life to Jesus Christ. And I think in a lot of cases, people don't understand what they're doing. That's why Pastor Terrell tries to meet with people. We try to express to them. We try to share with them, do you know what you're doing? If you don't plan on doing this, don't get up here. If you're really not going to raise your child for the Lord, don't come up here. If your husband doesn't want to raise the kid for the Lord, then you come up by yourself. But it would be a slap in God's face to have him come up and say he's going to raise the child for God when he doesn't have any intention of doing it. In-laws, uncles, aunts, you just can't have them stand up and say they will when they won't, because it's such a serious thing of dedicating our children to the Lord. Now, you noticed, I hope, in all of this that people could redeem things back. They could get them back. If they made a dedication of an animal or whatever, they could get it back, but they had to give back the value of the animal plus one-fifth of the original price. I think there's a lesson in that, too. Think before you dedicate. Think before you do something. Consider what it is that you're going to do before you do it. But you know what? We can still pay 25% interest on credit cards and not think about it, can't we? It's always amazed me, and I know that this is not apples for apples, but it's always amazed me that, you know, sometimes when it comes to the things of the Lord, we're going, gosh, tithing, you know, giving to God, that's 10% of my income, but yet we'll go charge something and pay 22% for that TV or that whatever, and we don't think twice about it. I mean, we just figure that that's the price of getting what we want now. It's just always been an amazing thing to me. All right, guys, for the sake of time, let's kind of condense a little bit of what's going on. If you go verses 14 through 25, same thing. He deals with the fields. He deals with the harvest that's coming from the fields. And remember the year of Jubilee? Remember the year of Jubilee when everything went back to its original owners? So when he's saying, when you place a value either on the people or on the land or on the produce, you've got to keep in mind that on the 49th year, everything is going to go back to everyone else, on the 50th year. So everything has to be valued based on that. You have to base it on those things. But again, it could be brought back or bought back if you wanted to buy those back. I want to give you Leviticus 27 verses 26 through 34. However, a firstborn among animals, which is a firstborn, belongs to the Lord. No man may consecrate it, whether ox or sheep. It is the Lord's. But if it is among the unclean animals, you know what? I'm going to summarize this too. There's three things he lists here that he says you can't make a vow on, no matter what. And here are the three things. The firstborn, either man or animal. Now, why do you think you couldn't make a vow on those? Because they were already God's. In this society, the firstborn was dedicated to God automatically. So you couldn't turn around and give something that really you didn't own to start with. How come it's so easy to give what we don't really own? It's so easy to make promises on things that are not really ours. It's so easy to make promises on things that are our abundance. You know, it's really easy to give if you've got a lot to give. But it's really hard to be dedicated if maybe there's not a lot there to give. Back to the widow's mite, remember? The guys were standing in there. One guy was just shoving in his coins into the trumpets, and they were making all kinds of racket. The little widow walks over and puts in her penny. And Jesus said, I tell you that she gave more than all these other ones combined. Because it wasn't in the quantity. But that little gal put in all that she had, not knowing what was going to happen tomorrow. But she trusted that her God would take care of her family and take care of her life. David, when he wanted to build the temple and he wanted to purchase the threshing floor from Arunah, and Arunah said, you can just have it. If it's going to go to the Lord, you can have the threshing floor. You remember what David said? I will not give to the Lord that which costs me nothing. So in essence, the sweeter the sacrifice, the greater the gift. If you come from a poor family and Christmas comes along and you get very meager things, they can still be some of the greatest memories of your whole life because you remember how hard it was for mom and dad to even get those little things. I still to this day remember my first Christmas gift. We were, you know, 11 kids, welfare family. There wasn't any money, but my sisters went to work, and we had our very first Christmas that I could ever remember, and it was nothing more than a flashlight shaped like a ray gun. It made noise, and it made light, and I was one thrilled kid. Isn't that funny? All the Christmases that have come and gone, I still remember that one Christmas, and it wasn't the value. It was the love that it took for my sister to go to work and make sure we had Christmas. Three things they couldn't give, and that was the things were already the Lord's. The second thing was the tithe. So the first was the firstborn of man or beast, right? We got that one. The second one was anything that had already been dedicated. The third one was the tithe. Now, the tithe was already the Lord's. Now you might say, well, why does God need the tithe? He doesn't. We need to be giving people. God doesn't need anything from us. There's nothing in the world we can ever give back to God that's going to equal anything or buy us anything. He gave his life freely to us. But we need to be giving people. It's where we trust God. It's our covenant with God. If you guys will look all the way back to Abraham and see where it originated, it was God's covenant with Abraham, Abraham's covenant with God. And it was God, I'll love you all my life. Just take care of me and my family. And God said, you got it. And I believe that you and I enter into that covenant with the Lord when we trust him. Close with this. Remember Judges 11:30, verses 30 and 36, it goes, Jephthah made a vow to the Lord and said, here's a guy who made a vow, a dumb vow. He made a vow to the Lord and said, if you will indeed give the sons of Ammon into my hand, then it shall be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return from the war in peace from the sons of Ammon, it shall be yours, Lord, and I will offer it as a burnt offering. So Jephthah crossed over to the sons of Ammon to fight against them, and the Lord gave them into his hand. He struck them with a very great slaughter from Aroer to the entrance of Minnith, 20 cities and as far as Abel-Karamim. To the sons of Ammon, they were subdued before the sons of Israel. When Japheth came to his house, came home from war, came to his house in Mizpah, behold, guess what came out of his house first? His daughter was coming out to meet him with tambourines and with dancing. Now she was his one and only child. Besides her, he had no son or daughter. And when he saw her, he tore his clothes and said, alas, my daughter, you have brought me very low, and you are among those who trouble me, for I have given my word to the Lord, and I cannot take it back. She troubled him. Did you notice that? She didn't do anything. She's just being a young girl. She didn't make this stupid vow. He made the stupid vow. But he turns around and tries to project it on her. You trouble me. You know, you trouble me like all of my enemies. Why did you do this? Well, Dad, I didn't do anything. You did this. Guys, here's a lesson for us. Dads, moms, be careful how you live your life because you can trouble your children. You can make life miserable for them based on bad decisions. We have to be careful. Okay. And she said to him, my father, you have given your word to the Lord. Do to me as you have said, since the Lord has avenged you of your enemies. She said, Dad, do what you got to do. If you've made a promise to God, you need to uphold it. And he sacrificed her. She died. He did not have to make a stupid vow. He didn't have to do this. And I think he also could have probably went to the Lord and said, Lord, I'm a stupid man. I made a stupid vow. And I'm sorry. How can I redeem this? My daughter shouldn't have to pay for my stupidity, and I believe that God would have given him a way out. But instead, he follows it through and takes her life. Moral of the story, don't make any vows. Scripture says, let your yes be yes, and your no be no. And say, if God wills it, if God allows it, then I will do it. Okay, let's put it all together. No vows. If you make a vow, you need to honor it. So be careful about that vow. Think about it. Think about the long-term repercussions of a vow. And then lastly, we all need a superhero. And God promises to be ours. He hasn't stopped being the superhero of his children. A dad never stops trying to be the superhero of his kids. The only thing is that God can pull it off. We can't. So whatever you're going through tonight, whatever it is you're dealing with, I just want to encourage you. God knows he wants to be strong on your behalf, but there may be some things you need to let go of. You know, sin separates us from God. There may be some things in your life that God wants to work in a great way, and he just can't because those things are there. And I can promise you there's none of it that's worth hanging on to. Let's pray.